Woo, man, it has been a week for Star Wars. It's been a month for Star Wars, Armand, and I am excited to talk about it. So welcome everybody to the Rebel Rundown presented by Pop Culture Uncovered. Joining me as he does many times is Armand. How are you doing?
This is the way.
Look, we're in what, episode 4 of The Mandalorian right now, and as much as I personally feel like it's been hitting on all cylinders, I feel like there's this just outcry of like this, you know, of how this is the worst season ever, of like how everything's been ruined. I will be honest, I'm not going to watch any YouTube channels dedicated to this. I'm not going to listen to any, because to me, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I feel like episode 1 of this season was a little wobbly for me, because it's like it was already jarring for me to have had the whole like Grogu arc in the last couple episodes of the Book of Boba Fett. And so it does feel like I really didn't expect to be in this place with this third season. And then by the second and third and this episode, like everything's just, I'm like, it's fine. Everything's fine right now. Like we're learning everything that has been a frustration at the beginning of the season has been working itself towards something that makes me feel like any new thing that has been introduced, and we'll get more into details, but every new thing that gets introduced, just I feel like there's a plan, and I'm fine with that.
I guess I'm like this, man. We grew up, like, got people of our generation, right? People who we weren't old enough to see the original Star Wars, but we were probably old enough to see The Empire Strikes Back or maybe Return of the Jedi. For us, all of the stories that we're seeing in The Mandalorian told are all things that we had to envision in our minds from the comic books and from the novels. So mm-hmm. For me, I'm just like, I never, like, you know, it's funny, you and I talked, you know, separately last week, and I was telling you about how I always wanted to learn more about the Mandalorians just from playing KOTOR, and like mm-hmm. how spending time with them in KOTOR 2 was like the highlight of the game for me. And I was legitimately sad when I was like, I'm not going back to Mandalore. I mean, I'm not going back to Duxton to do any more stuff. I'm done. Well, I'm done with.
Well, because you're like spent all that time in KOTOR 1 and then 2, you're like, oh, he's Mandalore. Like, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, for all of this, I'm like, this is such a great story. And I guess I'm just going to say this because I thought about this earlier, and I'm sure somebody's going to have heartburn behind this. Look, as a part of the African diaspora, where I am far from my original culture and far from home, seeing Bo-Katan go back and be embraced by everybody, and like her, like just seeing her look at all of it, I was like, you know, I was like, this is like when you're part of a group of people that have been pulled apart, just that feel of coming back together and seeing Bo-Katan go from being a complete and total skeptic. So I was like, I thought it was the most subversive thing ever for them to be like, Din Djarin didn't see the Mythosaur. She saw the Mythosaur. Mm-hmm. And so she's starting to believe. And I mean, I love, you know, Emily Swallow as the armorer. I swear that they've written that character some of the best dialogue ever.
Right.
Because when she doesn't bat an eyelid, when she's like, all may wear the Mythosaur. It's the right of all Mandalorians. What if I want to? What if I told you if I saw one? This is the way. I'm like, yes.
First of all, okay, this is the way I got used a whole lot in this fourth episode, and I feel like at this point it's like the whatever of Mandalorian. It's like, all right, gotcha. Sure, why not? Okay, like all those things are just this is the way. But let's roll it back, because in the when we see Bo-Katan in the first episode,
right.
Right, because memes just went crazy, and God knows how many YouTube channels, I don't even want to get into it, probably had something to say about her being all salty and sulky. And like it's particular offense they take when it's a female character, right? But I did sit there, like both Rosa and I were watching it, and we were just like, what is Bo-Katan's problem? You know? But the truth is, we don't really see what actually happened. We just have her word that, you know, like she lost her followers. She didn't have the dark saber either. Like it's kind of what we were told we weren't shown. And so what we do have is sort of like a sulky Bo-Katan. But I also feel like there was almost nothing you could do with that character except what they're doing now, because you bring in this Clone Wars character, And you have the real life actress, which I love, Katie Sackhoff, despite how good of an actor I do or don't think she is. Like, it's the role she was made for. It's the role. It's her role to lose. You know, at the end of season two of Mandalorian, the arc that happens with the Darksaber and everything at the end of that, and this idea that she was going to come back and, like, you know, bring everyone together, seems very ambitious for a character we've only sort of reintroduced, you know, by way of the Mandalorian. And so how do you give that story some depth? And to me, this is kind of the perfect way. Like, she loses everything. She loses her followers. She loses her castle. She loses, you know, and so she's kind of just along for the ride with Din at this point. Like, she doesn't really have anything to lose and is kind of bitter and sulky. And I feel like we all would be. And yet the great thing about, you know, about the writing to me is that it's still Bo-Katan. So she's still going to step up. She's our Han Solo right now. Like, she's right. Going to be the reluctant hero. She's going to be like, all right, fine. Like, I'll come save the day. And that's been the fun part is every step of the way. She's never going to turn away from being the character that she is. And that's what makes this arc feel more redemptive. Like you said, when she ends up in the waters and they travel to the rest of the Mandalorians, like, and hasn't taken off her mask. Like, there's a part of her that almost feels like she's curious. Like, mm-hmm. she just wants to see. And, like, at any point she could take off her mask. At any point she could just turn from the group, but she doesn't. And she's sticking around. And so in that way, you also have, like, a very Western kind of thing, like, you know, the cowboy who stays for a second just to see, you know, like, can I make this worth work? And also the prodigal, you know, character who's brought back into the fold. And I think this means that wherever we place her, which I feel like it may be, you know, at the very, you know, head of Mandalorian society again, will feel like she's earned it by that point.
I mean, I thought what they did was really masterful, because when episode two, when you've got them exploring Mandalore, she's basically kind of telling you how much of a cynic she's been since she was a child, about mm-hmm. how everybody was so excited to see her recite the creed when she was a child, and it was just something that that we said as aristocrats to appease the people. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, you can tell how tortured she is about how everything's happened. And so when people were complaining about, you know, well, what is she so salty about? I'm like, well, has it ever occurred to anybody? She's also ticked off at herself. Like, she's mad.
She failed.
Right. Yeah, she's mad at all of it. And so I think your point is well taken in terms of, like, kind of like the redemptive arc, because it rings true for the character, because you're going back to the character's beginning and saying, this is somebody who's always been a skeptic, but now, like, she's seen the mythical become the real. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden the creed doesn't sound so ridiculous. And when she sees the creed in practice as the way that, you know, the, I guess, you know, the children of the watch, I guess is how uh-huh. we're unofficially referring to Din Djarin's clan. Like, you see, like, she sees, like, what's left of Mandalorian culture there. And I mean, and I love the fact that it was like she was the one who was leading the party to go get the kid. When everybody else took off on their jetpack, she went and got the ship. And lastly, it was, did you notice that she seemed like she was happy all the way up until the moment she was alone and she took her helmet off? That mm-hmm. was and so for me, I was like, you've gotten tired of being alone. And being in the company of all these people, you know, that really made, you know, a big difference. So, yeah, man. I mean, I just walk away from it just thoroughly impressed with the writing. Katie Sackhoff's acting is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I can't even begin to kind of, like, describe what a masterful job I think she does, because she somehow balances being snarky mm-hmm. and being really kind and gentle at the same time. Like, I was really curious about how are she and Grogu going to get along on their own.
I like this little bond that they're forming, because it feels natural. One quick point just occurred to me, and you were bringing up the droids. Oh my gosh, R4D5 is that?
Oh yeah, R4D5, yeah, the astromech, yeah,
the astromech. So there's so much that I liked about the episode where the previous episode where they're chasing after the TIE fighters, and you know, there's nothing worse. There are few things worse to me than episode 3 when R2D2 just bouncing around all over the place. The use of droids as like physical comedy is like so hit or miss for me. And I love like the subtlety of like he's just sliding on across the ship, you know, as they're turning and twisting and everything, but in ways that are like very realistic. It's just like, oh, there goes the droid sliding again. Oh, there goes the droid sliding again. But it's not like comical. It's just like that's what would happen, and it's kind of absurd. And that was really fun. And so there, I feel like the action has been just bonkers. All the little fight scenes, despite how dark they are, there's some like scary creatures we've seen this season. Oh, yes. Like there's stuff that I'm like, oh snap! This last episode with that giant flying dinosaur thing, like there was a point it was going on, and I was just like, I'm kind of like on the edge of my seat. They're doing a really good job, which is hard to do. Like when you have all these Mandalorians doing all this cool Mandalorian stuff, I feel like it can get overwhelming, or it can just be kind of cartoonish, or like now we're back into like an animated show. But the action was like really tense, and I really enjoyed that. And then at a certain point, like 2 or 3 minutes into this, what felt like 2 or 3 minutes into the sequence, I'm like, oh, shoot. It didn't even occur to me that this is a CGI creature. It's been a long time since I have seen something that where I forgot that it's not a real creature. But I was that immersed in what was happening. And so I feel like the action sequences, and I thought it was really smart in episode 3 of opening with this high-speed chase and all this action before switching to the second story. And then sort of like, okay, I'm all hyped up now, all excited. And now I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Who are all these people and why are we back with this? I feel like we should have talked after the third episode almost, yeah, because of all the things that went down and seeing behind the curtain into like the rehabilitation program for former Imperials, and how like just like you would expect, the red tape and like the system of it being so flawed and like so prone to like human error or like impersonality, it makes you feel like, oh, the New Republic is kind of just as cynical and crappy as the Empire was.
No, I mean, I agree. And it's funny. My first thought was that line from Rick Moranis in Spaceballs, evil will always win because good is dumb. And so when you hear them, you know, talking to, I can't remember the name of the scientist, because they referred to him by number, which kind of threw me off. You can kind of hear that he's stunned that they're not only dismantling all the Imperial ships, they're just destroying, but taking out all the Alliance ships as well. And so you're kind of like, well, what do you think's going to happen? Like, you know, the Imperial Remnant seems very happy to fly, you know, interceptors and TIE fighters wherever they want to. It's funny. I generally try to avoid internet scuttlebutt about episodes that I haven't watched. I did think, I think CBR had an article where they were talking about that episode rationalized the exact reason why you end up getting, like, you know, The Force Awakens, in terms of the New Republic is so naive about what the future looks like that they're like, well, we're just going to go back. Like, despite the fact that the most peaceful planet, Alderaan, has been destroyed, we're all going to try to be like Alderaan. And then the inevitable happens. I thought episode 3, the only thing I will tell you is that I felt like we spent a little bit too much time with those characters, because I guess I felt like Moff Gideon's assistant, mm-hmm, you kind of knew from the recap in the beginning that you can't trust her.
Right.
So while I felt like we took a while to get there, what I would say to counter that and say that, you know, I'm kind of wrong, is that it almost required it to be that long, because you needed to have the moment where you started to actually buy into the fact that maybe she actually is, you know, she is right. Nice.
We haven't spent enough time with her to believe that.
Right.
Which is maybe why, again, this unnecessary outrage at this character, where it's like, how are you going to be mad that a character made you feel something? How are you going to be mad at this character who did exactly what she was written to do? At no point did I really feel 100% comfortable that she was that she wasn't going to betray him. It was a mm-hmm. question of like how and for whom. And what was going on, and like, could she be redeemed, or could it be like, you know, oh, you know, I turned on him, but it turns out no, but no, we didn't get any of that. Turning that dial in the brain scrambler, the mind flayer.
Oh yeah, which was extraordinarily cold. The one thing I feel like I talked about it with you before we started the show, but I feel like remiss mm-hmm. if I didn't say it. The recaps for The Mandalorian are like the most perfect recaps I've ever seen before, because in terms of setting up the scientists. And the recap is, you know, we cut all the way back to episode 2, I think. And you've got one of our Hartsog saying, oh, you know, his curiosity outweighs, you know, his discretion. And when you see him getting set up, it's the, oh, because even when he was an Imperial scientist, he was trying to find the good in what he was doing. And when mm-hmm. when you go looking for the good in everything, it can make you naive, and it can make setting you up easy. The other thing that I thought was brilliant was, without having to have a whole bunch of like stormtroopers, a whole bunch of wink winks or nod nods, it's realizing, oh, everybody you saw in a New Republic uniform that stops the scientists, they're all part of the Imperial Remnant. They're all hiding. Because like she looks at him, picks up the case, and kind of gives him an apologetic nod, like, my bad, but it was necessary. She walks off, he starts trying to walk with her, and they're like, oh no.
Where are you going, buddy?
The guns are for you. So I mean, just between the recaps and that, I just felt like, you know, the only thing I'll say is jarring is that whether it's The Mandalorian or the Book of Boba Fett, like the willingness to kind of leave our main characters to jump into something else to come back later on, I think that can be a little offsetting when it's a show where it's not really a full ensemble. But in terms of the larger thing of building this Star Wars universe, I loved every minute of it. And I'm just sitting here in bated breath waiting for you to get to episode 4. I'm like, I'm not going to jump there until you tell me to.
Oh man, episode 4 was so much fun. But before we jump into that, The Mandalorian is definitely inspired by those drifter westerns, you know, and the shows that were inspired by drifter westerns. The Mandalorian is every bit Lone Wolf and Cub.
Oh yes, of course.
It's every, I wanted to say Chicken Hawk because I'm watching too much Bob's Burgers, but you know, and Kung Fu and like all of those, you know, the Incredible Hulk just wandering, you know, wandering the earth alone, except with, you know, my little protege. So maybe a little bit different, but that's definitely a convention, but also it's not, because we do jump from them into other characters. And I like that, you know, Dan Ige's not the best Mandalorian. Like, he's no slouch. We've seen him kick so much ass, but I think the thing that I love most about Star Wars heroes is when you kind of see them on their heels a little bit, is when mm-hmm. they get knocked down and they get back up. And that is where I wish in the sequels that we had seen more of that earlier on with some of the characters that I love the most.
Yeah.
Because as much as I love them, you know, I think there's valid critique. You want to see your heroes at least get dirty, get knocked down. And that's been true of Din. It's been true of Bo-Katan, you know, had getting that pauldron knocked off and getting, you know, and giving us an opportunity to get even further into the lore of the Mandalorians, which brings us to episode 4.
Well, before we jump to that, I just wanted to say, no, I agree with you, because I felt like, you know, for a lot of times in Star Wars, our heroes are given very direct problems, right? There's this big thing must be destroyed. There's this place must be attacked. I loved the fact that Din Djarin's, you know, time as an apostate, there's no shooting and stabbing and killing your way to the resolution that he needs. Like we saw from the last 2 episodes of the Book of Boba Fett and so far with the first 3 episodes of The Mandalorian, just that whole, I'm trying to get back to being with my people. I took my helmet off for the best of all possible reasons. But I'm not going to, because they could have written the character and had him go off with Bo-Katan's group, mm-hmm. and like at some point later try to, you know, link up with the original covert and tie it all together. Yeah.
Which I never expected. I never expected him to try to get back into the fold, to try this early.
Yes,
like for that to be the central theme. Like it already took me that. Yeah, it already threw me off by like the first 20 minutes in.
Yeah, no, and I just thought it was beautiful, and I mean I know there's been a lot of suspicion about the armorer's character and whether or not the armorer could be trusted. Mm-hmm. I love how the fact she was just like, these are the healing waters. this is the way. all y'all could drop the drama. He's redeemed. He's one of us again. It's party time. But yeah, so oh wise venerable Jedi Master, on to episode 4.
Ooh, speaking of venerable Jedi Master, so I feel like one of the big complaints has been, you know, about Grogu. Like, why is Grogu still around? I'm like, well, because he's half of the show, and he has been the whole time.
Right.
And despite the fact that, like, we weirdly had this unnecessary arc where we try to foist him off on Luke, and Luke spends a day with him, and is like, nah, kid, and sends him back. All of that ridiculousness aside, like, the critique of, like, you know, oh, it's Disney, and they're keeping Grogu around because he's cute and he sells toys. Like, that's Star Wars 101. What do you think the Ewoks were? R2-D2. Cutesy humorous characters have been around forever. But I do see the issue with Grogu being that he's so much like a toddler, right? He isn't very, he can't move very well, not very ambulatory, like normally. He doesn't move fast. He isn't imposing. He, you know, is kind of just a baby in a lot of ways, until we choose to, you know, exercise his cool Jedi powers. And so it did feel like, okay, I'm not saying Grogu should be gone, but I do want to know, how are we going to move this character forward? And I think episode 4 has kind of given us a little bit of a roadmap for that. Like, you know, now that he is within this whole time, like, kind of permanently, now is he going to be treated like a foundling? Is he going to be raised like a foundling? Is he going to have to walk the path and become Mandalorian? And how weird is that for, like, a Force user to be a Mandalorian who's also, like, this tiny species? Like, there's so many question marks, and I'm not even afraid of what the answer is. Like, it might be terrible, but I've had terrible Star Wars. We've already had terrible.
But it's not going to be. I mean, and I guess, I'll pull it like this. From a canonical standpoint, right? The whole thing behind Luke and Luke's order was the fact that they were like, oh, this lack of attachment and all this stuff caused the original Jedi has a whole bunch of issues, and we're not going down that path. So I'm like, Grogu is a light side Force user who's he's true to the Jedi, you know, to the Jedi, you know, oh, you know, there is, you know, there is no passion, there is the way, you know, there is the Force. He's true to that, but at the same time, he's true to being a Mandalorian. Now, I'll say that, you know, they kind of muddied the waters early on with him doing stuff like, here, let me hold this animal up in the air so you can kill it. I mean, that might have been a little bit leaning towards the Sith side.
He didn't know better. He was just trying to be helpful.
But I like it. I guess, to be perfectly honest, it's we have fans have complained, oh, Star Wars is so formulaic, you know. The J.J. Abrams, you know, gave us basically, you know, a repeat version of our childhood with The Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker. And Rian Johnson tried to do something that violated canon and destroyed everything with The Last Jedi. So I'm like, all this stuff is consistent with what we know about the Star Wars universe, yet it manages to add to it and fill in holes. I'm kind of like this. I enjoy Grogu with The Mandalorian in part because I'm tired of characters like Spider-Man being like, he can't be married and he can't have kids because it destroys the action. It's like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. As a father, it's like, what more action is there than it's like, yeah, you gotta go save the kid, you know, from the giant flying lizard. I loved all of it. I was personally heartened for Ahmaad Best. I will tell you, To call a spade, I was one of the fans when The Phantom Menace came out. I hated Jar Jar Binks with the passion. I thought he was a patronizing racist character. I thought it was like, you know, the Jamaican patois was, amalgamation was offensive. As time went on and I kind of looked at other Star Wars, like alien races and whatnot, I was like, oh, Lucas has basically been doing versions of this the entire time. He just hadn't done
gotten there yet.
Right. But I was really heartened because, I mean, look, I was, you know, as the years have gone by and we've heard about how, you know, all of the fans' response and the death threats pushed him to a place where he was very suicidal and very depressed. I love what Star Wars is doing. Hayden Christensen got blasted. we brought him back for Obi-Wan, and he made that series. Mm-hmm. I was happy to see us to see Ahmaud Best as like the this is how Grogu survived. I loved that moment as a fan to see him again, but I loved that moment just as much for him, where I was like, you know what, dude, you really deserve this. You deserve to have, you know, look, for anybody who's a Star Wars fan, like I've got like the complete Star Wars encyclopedia, right? So Jaxar the Rabbit and everything else is all in there. Ahmaud Best deserves to have a character in there where it's a heroic character that even the most grumpy of fans are going to have to sit back and acknowledge. They're like, man, there was only one youngling who survived Order 66 and he was saved. He was saved, you know, by this Jedi master played by Ahmaud Best. Like, how does it get better than that?
There's a handful of characters that you meet them and within 10 seconds, you're like, not this person belongs. This person belongs in my Star Wars. And I felt like that character, that Jedi character, like you just kind of, you're just like, oh, I root for it. So I had seen some spoilers about Ahmaud Best. And then I watched the episode and was so distracted that I forgot it. So even though someone dropped a spoiler on me, watching it, it took me a second to remember to recognize who it was, to remember that there was, you know, that he shows up. And I enjoyed that whole sequence, like the whole escape. I'm like, I would watch this spinoff. I would watch, you know, him keeping Grogu safe for what, 20 years? So, that was, it felt good. As, look, Star Wars fans, I complain all the time about Star Wars fans who hate everything, forgetting that I was a Star Wars fan who hated everything. But I did, you know, I complained all the time about Jar Jar. And I still, you know, kind of will. But that's the George Lucas thing. That's, to me, that's not an Ahmaud Best thing. I love seeing this character, and I want more of this. And I think the other thing that, as far as the series, this so far this season, how that unfolds, I like being in this place that I do not, that I've never been before, which is watching a Force-sensitive character grow and develop in his like powers, his understanding, outside of a Jedi or Sith perspective. Mm-hmm. Like what happens when you have a powerful, you know, a powerful Force user, a Jedi essentially, who's not raised by Jedi, who's raised in a complete other culture. What happens when, you know, what happens when a Romulan is raised by Klingon? What happens when, you know, when this Force sensitive character?
But no, but Pete, I absolutely agree with you, because I feel like the storytelling possibilities are endless. It's like, look, what happens if when they pick up, you know, making Star Wars movies, it's Grogu's Jedi Order? And what if the Order is really different because he was raised as a Mandalorian? His sensibilities are
warrior
different.
Jedi aesthetic. I mean, warrior Jedi, yeah.
I mean, but no, I mean, I just think it's such a creative, I thought it's such a great creative direction. And I love how the other characters are building relationships with Grogu. I did, because I was constantly like,
the armor and Grogu.
Yes, because the whole time I'm watching the show, I'm like, you know, the magic feels like there's always has the potential of fading as soon as Grogu is interacting with somebody that's not Pedro Pascal. Mm-hmm. But I love how the fact, whether it was Bo-Katan, you know, whether it was not Pre Vizsla, but whoever the Vizsla, you know, descendant was, who mm-hmm. was like, you know, one doesn't speak unless one knows.
Right.
After bro, it's like how every Mandalorian is like, he's a foundling, he's a piece mm-hmm. of foundling, and as long as he's conducting himself in the right way, and I loved how the armorer, I loved how she interacted with him, and. I guess the best way I could just say it, man, is it's, I know that it's a puppet, but it's, they do such an amazing job that it's like, it's like, I'm a grown man and I'm entirely on to like the suspension of disbelief where I'm just like, I'm willing to completely buy the fact that this is a living thing.
Mm-hmm. I felt almost betrayed by the armor in that, like, she was so steadfast that when, you know, she kicks Din Djarin out of the order. Like, it's just like, oh my God, I hate her now. She's not cool. Like, and to come back to this whole, you know, to come back to this whole group, to come back to the armor and to see that she's just like, it's lawful for her. Like, she's, what is it? Lawful neutral. Like, she's
yes!
like, this is the way, is like the only time I really believe it is when she says it. And but she does more teaching Grogu the ways of Mandalorians and explaining it, you know, through that explanation to him, explaining it to us and bringing us back in and reminding us what this has all been about, than Luke did, you know, in the half an episode that he was hanging out with Grogu. Like, I feel more connected to this Mandalorian culture right now because I feel like I understand it and the rules are established in there, and she's a more convincing teacher than AI Luke. And that's really interesting to me.
And let me ask you this question. But I feel like as fans, why are we not acknowledging the achievement of the impossible? The entire time we were all growing up, it's like, look, I want to be a Jedi. If I can't be a Jedi, I got to fly the Falcon. And this really only the shackles on Star Wars were always, from a storytelling standpoint, the story's not really Star Wars until there's a Force wielder in the story. You're basically waiting for the Force wielder. Now it's, oh snap, people are more interested in being a Mandalorian than they are in being a Jedi. And I mean, and I feel like it's building in such a great fashion that I'm kind of like, I'm probably more excited to see the future of the Mandalorians than I am to see the future of the Jedi Order at this point. Because I'm just like, wow, I was like, it's been such great world building. And lastly, like, look, for somebody like me who hasn't watched every season of the Clone Wars, it's given me all the reason to go back, to go watch, to watch everything that I, you know, that I missed, so I can understand Pre Vizsla and the Darksaber and why Bo-Katan was so dedicated to getting it, and, you know, and why so many Mandalorians are like, you're not really Mandalore, you can't really lead lest you have. I love all of that. And lastly, for anybody complaining about Grogu being a Jedi, can we please just issue the reminder of the reason why the Darksaber exists is because there was a Mandalorian Jedi. So functionally, the person who ultimately one day should be wielding the Darksaber should be Grogu.
Oh, I don't want to see that.
I want to see.
Well, first of all, it will take us 200 years of Star Wars history to get Grogu to that spot. It's still going to be too short.
It'll take jumping 200 years to fix the last Star Wars movies. Jumping 200 years ahead is fine with me.
Fair enough. All right. Anything else you want to add or talk about for the first four episodes of this season of The Mandalorian?
I'll just say I think the direction has been great. I've really enjoyed how they've used all the characters. And you know what? And I love the fact that, you know, you always talk about Star Wars, the problem being like, you know, it's an incredibly big, you know, galaxy and Outer Rim, yet everybody seems to know each other. No, I love the fact that Din Djarin has the people that he can rely on and trust. Like because we're not dealing with like galactic, you know, figures of galactic importance on everything. Mm-hmm. It's not like everybody doesn't know who Luke Skywalker is. I mean, everybody knows who Luke Skywalker is. It's nice to see Din Djarin go back to Navarro and just kind of have those interactions. I mean, I'll just say I was waiting for this season to be the season where things fell apart, because let's be honest, Book of Boba Fett was good. It did not rise to the level of Mandalorian season one or two, of which there's no shame in that. That's just high. Very few things make it to that level. I have loved everything about this season. Even the things that I complain about, like how long episode 3 was, I wouldn't want them changed because they work the way they're designed. And so for me as a fan, man, more than anything else, I'm like, look, y'all, let's just appreciate what we have, because we're not going to get The Mandalorian forever. Disney is very, they are very big on making sure the shareholders get a return on their investment at all times. As soon as the numbers don't look fantastic, there's going to be like, oh, there's a two-part series conclusion to The Mandalorian. Check it out. So while we have it, let's enjoy it and let's have fun with it.
Absolutely. And at this point, I feel like if, as reviewers, as podcasters, as people who talk about movies and TV all the time, like I just feel like there is a point where we can just be okay with Star Wars be like, you know what? This isn't going to give me everything up. Because I feel like if you've rolled into every single episode hate watching it or being like, oh, this thing sucks or this thing's going to be terrible, and you've had to like and you've watched as it hasn't turned out that bad, I feel like maybe it's okay to just just check it out. Just hang out. Because you know what? We've all got Star Wars we love, and we've all got Star Wars we hate. And we're still here, most of us, for it. So maybe turn hate watching into just regular watching and be okay that, like, you're going to be bad at a character for an episode, because that's what writing is supposed to make you feel. And
I'm sorry, did you just say something? Because, you know, one of your comments made me start thinking about the Star Wars that I hate and the Ewok movies. Just manifested as soon as you said it.
Return of the Jedi is a work of art, sir.
No, I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about Return of the Jedi. Finish. I'm talking about the two Ewok movies they made after that. That's what I'm talking about.
Those were so, they were fine. And there were even the Ewok TV show, even the Ewok cartoon was fine. It was fine, Armand. Don't look at me like that. It was okay. It expanded the universe.
I can tell, you know, exactly what the 501st is going next. They're going to Pete's house.
So yeah, we all have Star Wars we love. And we all have Star Wars we hate. But everything that's, and I've been pulled into this too, you know, and I just feel like at every turn, I'm watching where they're not going the direction I would go. They're not going the direction I necessarily want them to go. But I'm really enjoying the way the story is being told. I don't know if that makes me a sucker. It just makes me enjoy Star Wars.
Which isn't that the whole point? Like,
and that is kind of the whole
point. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, these are supposed to be fun. Look, these are supposed to be fun morality tales. And I mean, if nothing else, I will tell you, just as a dad, episode 4, it was like seeing Vizsla's descendant who had fought Din Djarin in the Book of Boba Fett behind getting the Darksaber, you know, when that same guy had helped him save Grogu in like episode 2 or episode 3 of the first season. The fact that Din Djarin is now back saving his son, I was like, I was like, this is the way. I was like, this is what I want out of Star Wars. It's like, you know what? The galaxy can be a better place. When we're all willing to actually, like, you know, when we're willing to stop being the reluctant hero and start dipping into the, oh, crap, now I got to be heroic.
Right. I mean, that is kind of one of the central themes of Star Wars, is there's always one person who wants to jump into the fight way too soon without any knowledge of what's going to happen. And then that person learns to grow from it.
Right.
And then you got the person who doesn't want any part of the conflict, wants to stay completely out of it and do the thing. They get pulled in. And they, you know, and they make us happy by, you know, stepping up every single time. And I don't mind. That's the part of Star Wars being repetitive and Star Wars kind of telling you the same stories over and over again that I don't mind. There's other ways in which I wish it would be more original. But right now, I don't know. I don't have any complaints, and I'm okay if that. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I mean, I'm sure if we wanted to nitpick, we could find holes and flaws, or, you know, I'm sure we could probably try to even find some places where they're not consistent with canon. I don't care. I enjoyed going back. I mean, again, having wondered about what Mandalore looked like since, you know, with the Great Hyperspace War, or in the Dark Horse days, and all the time we spent with Candorus and the Mandalorians and KOTOR too. Just to have an episode of anything where I'm like, oh crap, it's Mandalore. So I'm enjoying all of it. And like you said, they're not doing what I would do. And I think that's the part that I'm enjoying the most. I don't know where this season is headed. And so that makes it, you know, just a joy watch. Cause I'm just like, I just want to know where we're going, because I never thought they could do another season coming off of the end of season 2. So I'm like, oh snap, like, you know, just all of it. And lastly, I'll just say this, when Grogu gets his additional piece of protection, I just loved that moment where I was like, wow, like, we're really gonna do it. He's gonna be a Mandalorian, and it's gonna be a slow burn. And anybody's like, when's he gonna get
it's gonna take gonna, us 100 years.
Right, when's he gonna get his helmet? They're like, it'll be the last episode of this of the show when he gets his helmet. But I just love how I love what they're doing with the characters and the direction they're going in. The only thing I'll say is a big question mark for me is, what do you do with Din Djarin now that he's no longer an apostate? And that he's raising Grogu. Where are the new challenges going to be? Of which it seems like Moff Gideon let's just say I don't think that New Republic prison is as secure as everybody right. thought it was. I guess Cara Dune being in the special forces and not keeping an eye on him is what's going to facilitate his escape. But Gina Carano, please apologize. Just apologize, because I want Cara Dune back. I don't want you to have your own show. I don't need all that. But do I want to see you in Star Wars? Yes. So yeah, that's it for me. I mean, Pete, the only other thing I could tell you is, you know what, man, I've thought long and hard about it. And you know what? This is the way.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging out with me. We are Pop Culture Uncovered. You can find us popcultureuncovered.com, PC Uncovered on Twitter and Instagram. The Rebel Rundown, we will have more episodes basically every time we talk Mandalorian. I think we will come back after a couple more episodes, see if it's still as good as we hope. For Armand, I'm Pete. We'll talk to you later.